Hello and welcome to The Happy Writer. This is a podcast that aims to bring readers more books to enjoy and to help authors find more joy in their writing. I am your host, Marissa Meyer. Thanks so much for joining me. I hope you guys are continuing to stay healthy and safe out there in your bunkers. A little bit of housekeeping today. We are now have had more than 10 podcast episodes, which I'm super psyched about. And I thought it was time to start asking you guys for your input. I really want this podcast to be something that you enjoy listening to and that you look forward to publishing every week. So I have put together a survey. You can find it at marissameyer.com/podcast. So please go and fill it out. Let me know how I'm doing. Let me know what you think I can do better. And at the end of that survey, there is a space where you have the option to put in your email address to win a book, probably. I don't know what the giveaway is yet, but you can get a signed book of some sort. So again, that is at marissameyer.com/podcast. Let's see, one thing that is making me really happy this week, and it's actually kind of a big thing today, is that we just revealed my new cover art. My book, Instant Karma, is coming out this November, and the cover was done by the amazing Vera Brosgel, who is one of my favorite graphic novel artists, and she's written some of my kids' favorite picture books, and I really love her, and I really love the cover. So please go look it up. Instant Karma is the book, and it's now available for pre-order as well. So super, super exciting stuff. And of course, the other thing that I am so happy about right now is getting to talk to today's guest. She is the author of the middle grade Farfetched, which she wrote under the pen name Finn Colazzo. That is currently a Barnes & Noble exclusive, but will soon be available more widely. And this week, she is making her YA debut with the fun and feminist contemporary book, The Life and Medieval Times of Kit Sweetly. Please welcome Jamie Pacton.
Hello.
Hi, Jamie. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. You're holding up in your bunker?
I am, yes. And my bunker is a strange place because I already worked from home and I already homeschooled my kids. And so not much has changed in my bunker.
I feel like it's been going on long enough now where I've fallen to this like new normal. So it doesn't seem quite as, you know, panic inducing as it was 2 months ago.
Yeah, it's still really weird not to be able to like go pick up a pizza without like a lot of planning and effort. But yeah, it's definitely more normalized.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad that you're doing well and you're celebrating your book launch.
Yay.
Kit Sweetly. I loved reading this book.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah, no. And I really think readers are going to absolutely dig it. It's so timely and fun and just wonderful. And I can't wait to talk about it. Why don't you start by telling listeners what the book is about?
Sure. Okay. So it's about, where the comps are, it's A Knight's Tale, but also meets Moxie. So it's about Kit, who's a 17-year-old, serving wench is her official title, but she's a waitress, at a medieval themed restaurant in the suburbs of Chicago. It's called The Castle, and Kit's, so her uncle's her boss, he's the king there, her brother is the Red Knight, and Kit desperately wants to be a knight. She's been training with her brother for years, but at this particular castle, only, you know, cis dudes are allowed to actually be knights, and Kit is just over it. So one night she rides out in her brother's place as the Red Knight. And, at the very end, when they say something like, the best man, you know, won the tournament, Kit whips off her helmet and says, I am no man. And that becomes a viral video that starts this whole campaign to change things at the castle. And then Kit is joined by several of her friends who are actually folks all across the gender spectrum, and they're all fighting to make things a bit more fair and a bit more historically accurate. So the book is funny, and it's got little tidbits of medieval history woven in, and it is feminist, but in a very intersectional kind of way. And then Kit, of course, has still struggling with things in her own life. Her family's struggling with poverty. She's trying to get into her dream college. And then, of course, she's trying to figure out the complicated relationship she has with her best friend, who she's absolutely certainly never going to date, although she would desperately like to. So,
I would desperately like to date him, too.
Oh, he's so good. I absolutely modeled him off of my husband, I will say that. Okay. And he's a good human. And I wanted a YA love interest that was like, you know, he's got his own things. He's strong in his own right. But he also, like, he's there for Kit's dreams as well. And I think that's important to show.
So. Yeah, no, he's a very endearing character. There's one part where Kit is thinking about him and there's a line that's something like, he's just a miracle of a human. I loved that line. He actually reminded me a fair amount of my husband as well. So well, yay. Love. So I read somewhere that you were inspired to write this book after a real life visit to medieval times.
That is true.
What was it about you going and watching this show that then kind of brought to life Kit's story?
Sure. So my husband is actually from the suburbs of Chicago, and there's this huge castle there. And you know, for the first 15, 20 years of our relationship, we'd drive past it, like on the way to my in-laws' house, and you know, there's a castle. And I was always like, I would really like to go there because I love Renaissance fairs and I love medieval history. And I went to Marquette, where there is, in fact, you know, the Joan of Arc Chapel is there. So I've got this like deep love for history and medieval things, but I'd never been to this cheesy restaurant. And so fast forward, you know, to 2017, I'm still kind of reeling after the 2016 election. And, you know, my youngest son, we'd had this whole conversation for, you know, the better part of a year about feminism and all these things. And so we've got that dialogue going on. And then we go to the castle. I decided to just take him one night. So we're visiting my in-laws and I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna, we'll go. We'll go hang out. We'll see this dinner theater. It'll be a fun, you know, just ridiculous night with my son. And he's all excited to eat turkey legs. And as I was going, you know, I was like, oh, I think, you know, I really hope we see some, you know, female knights or something like that. I had no idea what I was getting into, but you know, we'd been talking about feminism. And also I just was telling him about female knights. Anyways, we get there and it is really, if you ever have a chance to go, I know there's one in Florida. It's extravagantly cheesy. It's so much fun. You know, and especially if you kind of just lean into it. And so, you know, I bought my son like the knight package, which is where they'll give him a little cloak and pretend to knight him. And like we bought the souvenirs. But as we were there and, you know, the knights were riding out, like on the one hand, I was having this very fun, just, you know, mom and kid experience of fanfare and pageantry. And on the other hand, I was really annoyed. I was like, there are no female knights out here. All of the women in this play or in this theater are, you know, serving food. And I think they've since updated it. I know there are queens now at medieval times. So the story has shifted a little, but there are still no female knights. And I did ask my server about that. I was like, would you like to do that? And she was like, oh yeah, I totally would. But you know, they won't let us. And then I just kind of like, I was sitting there and you know how stories come about, like you don't expect to find them sometimes. And I walked out of medieval times that night with like a pretty fully fledged, story idea. And it was nice because I knew from early on exactly what Kit wanted. You know, she wanted to become a knight. And so everything else just kind of slotted into place from there. But yeah, the book really, I had just finished writing this huge, like epic dark fantasy, which was, I think I was still looking for an agent at that point for a second agent. Cause I had recently left my first agent and had this, you know, new book that I was hoping would be, you know, my breakthrough in fantasy. So I wasn't looking to write a contemporary, but that's kind of the book that I discovered as I went there.
That's so funny how that happens sometimes. I was convinced that my first book would be high fantasy because that's what I read all through like my teen years. And then when the science fiction idea came for me, I was like, really? Science fiction? How was it hard as you're sitting there watching the medieval times and this story is kind of burbling up in your head? I must have been so hard to pay attention that night. You just imagine like Kit's head filling or Kit's story filling your head.
It definitely did. I mean, I was taking notes on my phone, but it's also, it's not, when I say, when, you know, paying attention, you know, you just kind of had to cheer loudly. And like, and my kid was so into it. And like, you know, we're, you know, screaming for whatever our night was. It was a pretty, like, I don't know, there are some parenting situations where you really need to be present and yeah. attending closely. This was like, just cheer loudly and like clink cups and that'll do it. But, you know, I did leave with notes on my phone, and then I went back to my in-laws that night and I wrote just a few notes, but actually, and I like to tell the story, the like kid's voice was so very strong in my head from early on with that like first line about the red knight only fighting on certain days of the week. Some of that is largely unchanged from like the few sentences that I wrote down that night, you know?
Mm-hmm. So. She's a great character. I connected with her so deeply, you know, in that great way where some characters like, you both want to be them and you just want to be friends with them and hang out with them. Awesome. And I felt that way with Kit. She's so funny. Her sense of humor is just fantastic. Have you been back to medieval nights or medieval times since then?
I did. Okay. So I went, you know, the one time I discovered this story, and then I went back and actually my husband came with us this time. So it was after Kit had already been bought, and I think I was done with copy edits. So I'd already seen like the ARC cover, but I didn't have ARC yet. Because my plan was to actually take the finished book, you know, and on the launch day, go to medieval times and like stand there with my book like a dork and be like,
oh, here we are. No, and but you I've never can't actually, do it
I can't,
now.
No. And I actually, through this process, I've met other people who actually, you know, people who are wenches in real life or people who are queens at medieval times. And, you know, they've been lovely, but we had all these plans to like get Kit into the castle for real, which have not come through because of the pandemic. But yes, I did go back, and it was very strange because it was like I was seeing the story everywhere as opposed to like kind of having it form and arrive in my head. It was like, oh, that person over there could be Kit, or I wonder if all these servers do hang out after the fact, you know?
That's so awesome. I love it. Would you, like, if you were working at the castle, what would you want your job to be?
I would definitely, let's see, me now or me at 17? At 17, I would have definitely wanted to have been either a knight or someone related to like horses or something like that. Mm-hmm. Now I feel like I don't know, I'm too, you know, get vertigo and things like that. So maybe I wouldn't want to be a knight. Maybe I'd want to be like someone like taking photographs or, you know, a queen up in the stands. But I definitely wouldn't want to be a serving wench. Like, I was a server for so long and I'd like to never, ever do that again. But I would love to be part of the show in some way. But what about you? What would you do?
Oh gosh. Queen. Gotta go with queen. Yeah. I just want to sit on my throne and tell people what to do.
It's a solid choice for sure.
Life goals. So I'm sure this is super naive, but I am so surprised that even here in 2020, girls really still aren't allowed to be knights.
Yeah. what I have learned, in the process of all this is like some of the things that I imagined and wrote into Kit just based on some of my initial either clues or research or talking to people, I actually like got a lot of that really right. And I find that so depressing in the same way. Like, I can't believe that, you know, it's still like just, you know, cis men that can be knights. And like I said, some of the people I know who work at the actual medieval times are working to change that, but there are some pretty like deep corporate structures that are holding on to this idea that, you know, in the Middle Ages, only men fought, and here's what women did. And, you know, and so it is really this sort of dinosaur of a thing that is going to take some time to change. With that said, at Ren Fairs, there are some female knights. If you look it up, there's some amazing women out there doing really cool. I mean, you know, they're jousting, they're riding as knights. And I was just emailing with someone this morning about talking to one of these jousters. But in the dinner party circuit, at least, I've not found that's changed very much. And even in Ren Fairs, it's the rarity that you see a female knight. And I think that should just, like, we should just do away with that altogether. Like, whoever wants to be a knight, let them fight.
Yeah, in this day and age, and you make some excellent points in the book, too, that, you know, there were women warriors and fighters. And, you know, maybe they weren't being knighted, or maybe they were, I actually don't know. But it's not, I mean, it's not like all the women throughout these hundreds and hundreds of years just stayed home and cooked all the time. Like there were women out there fighting for their country and their people.
And they were traveling. I mean, you know, like Chaucer does shows us a little bit about like with the wife of Bath and stuff, but I mean, women like the Middle Ages, and I think maybe this is one of their larger points in that I was trying to get across in Kit, is this like the Middle Ages were so, they were diverse, you know, they were varied. It's a huge span of time. You know, there's no monolithic, like this was the Middle Ages, you know, and it's just the Monty Python version of it or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I don't think women were being knighted per se, but there were queens leading, you know, leading armies into battle. And there were, you know, just fighters who would pick up swords, and of course all the Viking warrior women. And I mean, so it's a lot more interesting than what I studied in even in college, you know. But
yeah, and of course, I mean, I think Joan of Arc is probably the most well known. Who is your, like, do you have a favorite, like, totally badass female from history?
There's a few that Kit lists on her wall of amazing women. I think some of those women are incredible. I am sort of drawn in history to some of the queens, and like both for military prowess and for some of the scheming they ended up doing, and just some of the like the leadership that they put out there in the midst of all of this.
I have a friend of mine gave me the book Rejected Princesses. And it's a compilation of both fictional and non-fictional females from all over the world, all different time periods, but just, you know, they who did things that would not make them a Disney princess, essentially, but in a lot of ways they were just awesome, you know, brave, bold heroines. So it's been a really fun book to be perusing lately. I think you'd like it.
I think I just looked that up. I will definitely order that. I love Mackenzie Lee's famous The Women in History book that she did. Oh, it's called Bygone Badass Broads. It's great. It's, you know, it's got lots of little snippets. And I guess, you know, to your question of do I have just one? I do not have just one woman that I, you know, think is remarkable. But like once you start reading about it and once you start peeling back the layers of history, that's where it's just surprising to see women across the world, actually. So this is not just women in Western Europe, you know, it's women in Asia and in South America, who were doing fierce, like bold things and changing history. And we just don't get to hear about it as often as we should, you know?
Yeah. I'm a believer that books can change the world, and can change things. That they plant seeds in our minds. They change the way we think about things, and that can go off to have really big consequences. Is there any part of you that's hoping that Kit Sweetley and her story is actually going to go and actually start making some of these changes that happen in the book?
Yes, is my easy answer. I have been reluctant to talk too much about this just because it feels like such a bold hope. But what I do, like my modest hope, is that we will at least start having more conversations around like this notion of the Middle Ages, or around like, and Kit gets into this a little bit, and I sort of talk about this occasionally on social media, but so much of what's presented as history, you know, and like what my son is reading or things like that is just, it's stuff that's been recorded by people with agendas, you know, and so it's not value neutral. You have to think about it. You have to look at different sides. And this is why it's so exciting that there's so many different narratives coming out of like communities all over the world and from people of color and things like that. We're getting different stories that have been told. And I think history deserves the same treatment. You know, I think we need to rethink, you know, what life was like in England in the 1400s or something like that. I do hope that it starts a conversation. And if it did change things at medieval times, like if just that one very modest goal, I think that would be phenomenal. I would love to take my son there, you know, in a couple of years when we can all leave our houses again. And he can see female knights riding out. And I would love for, you know, people who would have been wenches to actually have a chance at being a knight. And again, like I was sort of working on some of these things with the people I know who work there, but we're all sort of at a halt. But yes, my secret goal is that Kit Sweetly gets a movie deal or a Netflix deal, and then it gets talked about enough and enjoyed enough that it's like, oh, you know what, that really isn't fair, and that kind of enters into our consciousness that's something that even in a cheesy dinner theater we can be talking and thinking about gender differently, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, that's my new dream too. I also want to see Kit Sweetly get a movie deal and be able to go to Medieval Nights next time I'm in Florida and see a female knight.
Let's just put that out there in the universe and hope.
Yes, yes.
I know Amy Poehler's making Moxie right now, and I was like, oh, but how about a medieval Moxie?
Yeah.
It could be so funny. But
yeah. No, well, I loved this book. I hope it gets a lot of great traction.
Thank you.
And there really are just so many wonderful things to talk about and to explore inside of it. And even on the surface, talking about girl knights and this, female that wants to be a knight. But you could go deeper than that. It's, you have, people of different gender identities and sexualities, and, there's talk about class and poverty and diversity, and it's a really wonderful cast of characters that you've built, and all kind of fighting for the same thing, to be seen and to be a part of this story, which is, makes it a really powerful read kind of, but in the guise of this very sweet, cute story.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been kind of marketed as a rom-com. It is that, but it's not just that. Mm-hmm. So I've had, I don't know, when people ask about the romance, and I'm like, oh yeah, it's there. There's other things. And I mean, my one kind of regret with this book, because there's only, I don't know, we were close to 300 pages or 400 pages, maybe. Like, I would have loved to write more with the other knights, but there's also stories there that aren't mine to tell,
Yeah.
And so, I had someone write about, I really wanted to see a trans knight be the main character. And I'm like, me too. I would love that book. Mm-hmm. But again, that's not mine to tell. So here's a rich cast of characters where you can imagine these other stories. And but thank you for saying that about some of the other hard issues it grapples with, because I think that's kind of that's something you can do in contemporary, that you can, life is complicated. People have more than one problem going on at once, and so you can kind of address that in the stories we tell.
Yeah. So to kind of switch gears a little bit, and a question that comes up all the time is, when did you know that you wanted to be a writer? And I feel like so often people, and myself included, say, oh, I always knew that I wanted to be a writer. Wanted to be a writer since I was a little kid. And that was not your story, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I was always writing. So I'm the oldest of 10 kids. And so I was always inventing stories and plays for them and making them perform in my version of The Wind in the Willows. And I was a pretty relentless older sister in that regard. And so I was writing stories, and then in high school, I was doing a lot of extremely deep and meaningful poetry.
Me too.
I have notebooks that I'm like, oh boy, I thought this was really, really something. But I was also deeply interested in ecology and biology. And so when I went to college, I was actually I either wanted to be a marine biologist or a brain surgeon, who also wrote books. And incidentally, I see more and more people these days in my Twitter and stuff who are in med school, but also writing books. And I admire them greatly. But yeah, I went to college and I worked in a biology lab for 2 years. I was on the sort of biology track. And then I did miserably in chemistry too. And in the biology lab, my job, they were studying bacteria cultures. And my job was to kind of help them log data, which is very boring. And then also to do wash dishes and take things to the autoclave and sterilize them. And I broke a lot of dishes. So these are huge, flasks that are as big as my torso and that are worth, hundreds of dollars. And I kept dropping them. And so that's when I had a revelation that I was not meant to be a brain surgeon. Very serious about that. And so simultaneously, while I was taking these science classes, I was taking English classes and history classes, and I was really enjoying those. So I switched from like biology and pre-med to English, and then with history and philosophy minors. And I took some writing classes in college, and then I got done with college, and I very much just had no job prospects. So I was waitressing, and I worked in a pen store, and I worked as a nanny, and I worked in Montessori school. And it kind of like, I was really putting off my next steps in my career, because I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. Number one, because what I wanted to do was be an author, but I didn't know how to do it. So this is like early 2001, probably. So in the days before you could just go into a Twitter pitch contest or even really, you know, meet agents. So it took me a long time, not only to finish a book, to finish writing a book, because I was working and hanging out and being 20 or 25, but also just because I didn't understand sort of infrastructure, you know, to get out there. And I worked at Sourcebooks as an intern back in 2003, and I loved that job. I think I would have stayed in publishing as a career, like if they'd had a position after that internship. But it just didn't work out that way. So anyways, I ended up bumming around for a while and eventually got a master's in English. Now I teach English and figured out the writing thing along the way.
So it was a journey.
It was a journey. And you know, I also like my writing really picked up. So I have two kids and my oldest is severely autistic and nonverbal. And so when they were little, you know, I had my husband was in grad school, I was teaching online and I had these kids. And so what I would do is I would drive around with them until they'd fall asleep in the back of the car. And then I'd write, I'd like park in a grocery store parking lot and I'd write, and I was writing for magazines at the time, but also writing fiction. So I wrote like 10 novels in their early childhood years, cause it was kind of this thing that I was doing for me, but also like with the hopes that it would help my family, which was kind of a big motivation, you know? Mm-hmm. So that has all come together now, you know, a decade later is lovely and strange. I meant to tell you this. I think that I saw you back in 2013, maybe at the PNWA, so the Pacific Northwest Writers Association. That was my first conference. I was like a finalist in their contest. And I feel like I remember you were there doing an event. Like this is early back when like your first book came out.
I did do a PN. I was probably there. I don't remember.
I know. I mean, it was a long time ago, but I was talking about one of my friends who actually her book came out last year and like now she's a bestseller, but I met her that year and I was telling her I was doing this and she's like, oh, I think we saw her. And I was like, oh, I think you're right.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, it's just a weird long journey. And that's what I tell people when they ask me about publishing advice. I'm like, well, just be prepared for it to be, it could be very long. It could be very short. You never know.
You know? Yeah. Well, it's true. And everyone has a different story, a different path that they took to get there. There's no right or wrong way.
Well, and literally the only thing you can control is the work you do. I mean, I'm actually sitting at my desk looking at my typed up KidSweetly marketing promo plan that I made back in like, I don't know, December. And talk about things you can't control, like global pandemics.
Yeah, things. No like, kidding.
I can only control writing the next book and, you know, just enjoying this debut process is different as it is.
Yeah. Know? What has it been like trying to do your debut here in the midst of all this?
I mean, honestly, mostly it's been okay because there's been so much like an outpouring of support from people like virtually. So I feel like I've gotten contacted to do some kinds of events or panels that maybe would have been off people's radars before. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely bummed about like the school visits and like not getting to go to ALA and some of these just, larger events that I've looked forward to. But I don't know, I am still interacting with readers. I'm still sending out pre-order stuff. So logistically it's a little trickier, but also with some of my parenting commitments, it's actually easier for me to do virtual events because it's hard to find care for my son.
Sure.
So I don't know, it's been a strange thing, but again, I just kind of, it's out of my control. So I'm rolling with it and I'm hoping, you know, book two or book three, there will be events maybe in the world.
Yeah, no, of course. So. It's, you know, this is just the start of the career, yeah. You know, so there's plenty of time for that.
Exactly.
Yeah. What are you working on next?
I just turned in, let's see, on Friday or no, Thursday. Yeah. Thursday, I just turned in my second, so the draft of book two, like the developmental adult edit version to my editor. So that's another contemporary. It's called Lucky Girl, and it's about a 17-year-old in a small town in Wisconsin who she buys a lotto ticket as a minor And then she wins like $58 million. But she can't tell anyone she's won because if, well, two things. One, it's not her birthday yet. And so she wants to wait until her birthday. And then she realizes that if you buy a lotto ticket as a minor and the commission finds out, they'll just take the money from you. And in fact, you're guilty of a misdemeanor. So,
Oh gosh.
The whole book is kind of her scrambling to figure out what to do with this huge money. And does she give it up? Or does she ask her ex-boyfriend who she's trying to get over to cash it for because he's 18? Or does she ask her mother? And her mother's a hoarder. And her mother's like her, our girl's dad has died. And so her mother has filled the house with like other people's personalized like mugs and mouse pads and, you know, all those things that you find at thrift stores sometimes. So Jane doesn't want to give it to her mother. And so it's a strange book. It's totally different than Kit. It's kind of an anti-rom-com because this is about Jane and her ex-boyfriend Holden. And it's kind of the book about getting over that high school boyfriend, the one you were with, and how do you do that? And how do you say goodbye to love, but also trying to solve this ridiculous problem. So I struggled a lot with book two because Kit is such a rompy book with clear goals. And this book is so different, but you know, it got sold before Kit kind of came into the world. So that's how it goes. But I'm also writing another YA fantasy. I'm about 30,000 words into that. And it's kind of my secret project that's, you know, I go back to, I've been planning it for a while. So we'll see if that takes off. But
I love having this secret project on the back burner.
Well, it's interesting too. I don't know if you feel this way, but it's so different to write a book that's already like under contract, you know? So I sold book two to Page Street on, you know, just like a chapter and a proposal. And then I had to write the book. And with this one, it's not sold, you know, my agent hasn't even seen it yet. So I just get to play and make it as weird or as whimsical as I want to, because there's no expectations for it at this moment. And I like
that. Yeah, no, it's true. Once you have a contract and you feel like there's someone watching over your shoulder waiting to see what you're doing, it completely changes the process.
Or you at least have to adhere to the outline you've given them.
Right. To some degree, for sure.
Right, exactly. There were surprises in this one, too.
Yeah.
But that said, it's also a wonderful thing to not feel like you're operating alone in the cold. And so you do have a contract. So it was just a challenging, interesting process. Also pandemic. So
also pandemic.
Right.
Well, I think, was it Lucky Girl? Was that the title?
Yeah, that's it too.
Yeah, no, I think that sounds, it's a great premise.
Thank you. And, you know, it's kind of, I mean, I guess like with Kit, it's funny, but it's also got this kind of like deep vein of like some very hard, very sad things. And I kind of think, I don't know if that's where I'm going to live as a contemporary writer, but I think that's how I move through the world is like, there's a lot about life that is very funny and amusing and delightful. And there's a lot that's very hard. And like, we can talk about both, you know?
Yeah, no. And as a writer, I think it can be fun to kind of balance both of those things within one story too. Yeah. All right. So we are going to wrap this up now with a happy writer lightning round.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
What book makes you happy?
Oh gosh. I really love Well Met by Jen DeLuca. And I really love basically any kind of romance. I'm reading You Deserve Each Other right now. And it's cracking me up.
I am listening to Well Met on audio right now.
Yay.
And it's fabulous. I love it. I will say trying to listen to Well Met and read Kit Sweetly at the same time, there were times where I started to get confused. My wires were getting crossed.
That's funny because Jen and I actually, we just did an Instagram event and we think of each other as like, you know, Kit's the like teen sister of her book.
Totally.
Have you read Red, White, and Royal Blue?
No, but it's on my list.
That probably is like, I mean, that's such a delight of a rom-com. That's the book probably everybody needs to read right now just to be buoyed by love, you know?
I love it. I'll put it on. I'll move it to the top. I've heard a lot of amazing things about it.
It is a delight,
Sorry, this is supposed to be lightning round.
That's okay.
What do you do to celebrate an accomplishment?
In non-pandemic life, I definitely go pick up dinner. Every book deal that I get, I buy myself a new Kate Spade bag. So that was a fun thing I was doing, just because I always wanted one and I never bought myself one. And so I have three lovely bags now. But I don't know. I treat myself a little bit and I try to like just you know, we have a night of gin cocktails and dinner, and it's lovely.
Kate Spade and gin cocktails. You are speaking my language. How do you fill the creative well?
I take time off of social media. I read a lot. I will definitely, especially when I'm done drafting a project, I like to just take like a week or a month or however long I need to just read books again. I like to be outside, and I don't know, I'm doing lots of random new hobbies. Like, I'm learning to play the ukulele, and I'm trying to learn to dance based on my TikTok watching. So I don't know, just things in life that aren't, producing something creatively, I think, tend to fill me up.
Jamie, you and I are kindred spirits. I am also learning to play the ukulele.
Are you?
Yeah.
Is it going?
Well, I've been taking lessons for 2 years now, actually. So I guess I'm to the, kind of to the point where I guess I can say that I play the ukulele.
I would say that's fair.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know. I'm still struggling to like think of myself as a musician, but I love it. I love the instrument, and it's been super fun.
Yeah, so. I am just at the point. I'm like, so again, my husband and I are learning while we're here in quarantine. Mm. I can get through Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I can play a Radiohead song. You know, there's nice. A couple others. But yeah, I don't know the notes or anything, but I tried to play the guitar for a long time, and my hands are kind of small. So I like the ukulele because it's easier.
Yeah, just four strings. It's not nearly as intimidating. That was...
But lessons for 2 years is awesome. I bet you know all sorts of songs.
If I have my notes in front of me, I can do pretty good. But I need to start memorizing things. Gotcha. Like, if I don't have my notes, then I'm totally lost. But anyway. Okay. We keep getting sidetracked. We should have just started with the lightning round.
The lightning round.
What advice would you give to help someone become a happier writer?
I would definitely, kind of what I talked about before, understand that there's just so much you can't control. And so, you know, write what you want, and find stories that bring you joy. And that's kind of what I've been thinking about as I think about like writing really hard, dark, you know, fantasies or something. I was like, right now I need to write a book that makes me joyful. And so I can put that joy on the page for other people. So I would say, you know, let go of some of the control and occasionally give yourself breaks. Like, there's lots of important and interesting conversations happening on Twitter and on Instagram, but give yourself breaks from those sometimes to just kind of, you know, enjoy your life or your process. And also just be kind to yourself, because there's a lot of rejection and a lot of heartache that goes into this business. And that doesn't have to be where you land every time you sit down to write, you know?
Yeah. Lastly, where can people find you?
Sure. My website is jamiepacton.com. So it's JamiePacton.com. And then I'm at Jamie Pacton. So same spelling at Instagram and Twitter. And then on my website too, if you really want to see my Pinterest boards or things like that, there are links there.
Thank you so much for joining me
Welcome.
Today, Jamie.
It was
so much fun. Readers, definitely go check out The Life and Medieval Times of Kit Sweetly. It is out this week. And now more than ever, if you can support your local indie bookstore, we definitely encourage you to do so. Please subscribe to this podcast so you will always be in the know about new episodes. You can also find us on Instagram at Marissa Meyer Author and at Happy Writer Podcast. And one more time, if you would go fill out that survey for me and let me know how I'm doing and what you would like to see done differently in future episodes, you can find that survey at marissameyer.com/podcast. Until next time, stay healthy and cozy out in your bunkers. And whatever life throws at you today, I do hope that now you are feeling a little bit happier.